access number 28628, Captain Derwent Road, Reel 17. Now, what happens after you're working up trials on the HMS Gloucester?
We then became fully fledged, fully operational members of the fleet.
Where were you based, or was that Portsmouth?
We were based in Portsmouth, yes, yet again.
And what's your role? What's happening with the Gloucester?
We were in the 5th Destroyer Flotilla.
And what does that entail?
Well, it was a loose affiliation. Really, it was each ship is placed in a squadron or a flotilla, which means he comes under a senior captain for sort of administrative reasons. Also, they try and put the ships of the same class in the same flotilla so you can get better technical support. There's more standard, more knowledge within the squadron of each other's problems, and you you can speak the same language. So that's the daily schedule. You do not, in fact, very rarely do you actually operate together. But for instance, my Captain D would destroyer captain would write my confidential report, and he'd occasionally come to see us and even go to see how we handle things and did things. So that was the role of the reason for the squadrons existing.
Now, how are you settling down on your ship with your crew and your officers? You'd had ships before, but you know this is a bigger ship.
Yes, I'd had ships before. I mean, it was a great ship and a wonderful, lovely ship, lovely to look at and great sailing. But I did find, and I think it's probably the first time I'm admitting this, that I didn't quite get on as well with some of the officers and not so much the crew, some of the officers as I did in, say, Invincible or Jaguar or even
the
Shanty.
Well,
I thought, they were my officers, I thought that, for instance, the first lieutenant was not as strong as previous first lieutenants I had, and I had to keep a much closer eye on him. I mean, he was a very nice guy, but he was not somebody I would have picked out, especially. He was the solid, dependable type, and I wanted somebody with a bit more sort of imagination and flair. And the same thing to some extent. I had a very good weapons engineer officer, very up and coming, who was a commander, I think, shortly after that. But the mechanical engineer was, again, not all that brilliant. I had an excellent flight commander, helicopter flight, who's now, I think he's a commodore now, anyway. And some good flight observers. One or two of the seaman officers were a bit sort of, junior officers were a bit sort of borderline. So I think I had to keep a closer eye on them than I had some of the others.
Did that affect crew morale? Was it a happy ship?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. No. It was a very happy ship. But whether it might have been a reflection on the fact that I was then a senior. Not many people were lucky enough to get a sea command as a captain, unless you drove the big boys. But I never aspired to that. I was very happy driving a destroyer. There were a number of captains, who four-stripe captains, who by rank, who were lucky enough to command destroyers, and I was very happy to do that. And perhaps because I'd had so much sea time, I mean, it was my third command and my fourth sea-going job as a commander and above, which was actually quite rare. And perhaps I was expecting too much from the sort of operational side from some of these chaps who were maybe not that so experienced.
Now, what was the operation? What were you doing? I mean, I presume X is the normal thing, but...
Well, it was normal exercises. Being a new ship, we were doing a lot of sort of mundane things, trials, and a lot of mundane jobs. We went to Gibraltar to do a sort of guardship again, although it wasn't quite so intensive as the time before. We did a number of visits around this country. I remember going to Falmouth. We had a very interesting visit to Falmouth. Socially, it was just interesting because I'd never been there before. We didn't. God, what's my name? Did we go up to Scandinavia? I can't remember us going anywhere else interesting.
So you didn't. It's not. This is not a commission that's sticking in your mind. It's from the outside.
It's sticking in my mind because it was my last command. It was a brand new ship, and it really was. You know, the lean greyhounds of the ocean, destroyer, wonderful thing. But I can't remember any great deployment we made or visit we made. I mean, it's terrible. I probably remember after you've gone. But
was it a successful ship in the sense of a military thing? You know,
oh, yes.
Or rather naval?
I mean, yeah, well, you have to be. Otherwise, you just don't last. I mean, you have to achieve standards.
No, I meant, was the Type 4, Stretch Type 42?
Oh, yeah.
Was it a successful adaptation?
Very much. Very much. I mean, not long after, my ship, Gloucester, was involved in the First Gulf War, very successfully shot down, was the only ship to shoot down a missile, an enemy missile there. Narrowly missed a mine, but did that. And she's just figured very prominently in the Beirut evacuation. She was the first ship in there to evacuate.
So the idea of stretching them, or rather unshortening
so
them, was successful.
It was successful in that A, it made them better sea boats, and B, it made them faster.
Now, so, well, what's next then? Unless you can think of anything else aboard the Gloucester.
Well, to my eternal shame and chagrin, I can't think of anything else, which is terrible.
So what's that? Now, I'm not quite sure of your rank, and I think this is because
I'm
very familiar with ranks. Are you a commander or a captain?
Well, I'm a captain. I was selected for promotion at the end of my time in Invincible, and I was a captain when I went to Naples.
That's when you got promoted, yeah.
So I'm now a captain. After Gloucester, I've got 4 years seniority as a captain. Four to 5 years seniority as a captain. That's about halfway through.
Now, what happens next then? What's your next posting?
No.
You're on 2 years, is it?
I was 2 years altogether with Gloucester, but
that's 84
the first, to 86. 84 to 86. The first few months were ashore, standing by a building.
Now, this is your last sea command. Did you realise it would be your last sea command or not?
Yes.
And how did you feel about that?
Well, I was very sorry. I mean, I'd done a lot of sea time. I'd enjoyed every minute of all my sea jobs, including Gloucester, which was a great privilege. And it was it was an era coming to the end. But I knew I got another, after Gloucester, another 5 years in the Navy, another two jobs. And I was trying to avoid going to the Ministry of Defence.
So what's your next posting?
So, now next I was sent as naval director back to RAF Turnhouse to the Joint Maritime Operational Training Staff, JMOTS, Joint Maritime Operational Training Staff.
And so this was based at RAF Turnhouse, but it was a naval appointment.
Yes, we had, as I explained before, when I was up there in Invincible on the other side of the coin. This establishment had two directors, an RAF director who was a group captain and a naval director who was a naval captain. However, we worked for this establishment, JMOTS, worked for Commander-in-Chief Fleet. We were part of his organisation. So it was, yes, a naval one.
Now, tell me about we've done some of this before, but tell me about your perspective as director of what you're doing.
We've done some of this before, and it was the most senior, most advanced maritime warfare training course, I should think, in NATO probably, except for some of the American ones, some of the huge, great fleet ones, but as a regular course, and we ran three courses a year, it was one of the biggest, and we generally played around with fleets of up to 40, 50 maybe ships. We used to organise the exercises, write the op orders, and run the exercises.
And what were the particular challenges you found in this?
Well, the particular challenges were, funnily enough, mainly with the ships. You were never quite sure you were going to get the ships you were told you were going to get on the day, because of a whole host of events, breakdowns, bad weather, other countries deciding they wanted the ship doing something else. So you could plan till you were blue in the face. Didn't always happen. But you got used to that, and you could always have means of working around it. The other plans, the other problems were if the enemy, the ships and aircraft and submarines used in the enemy, were not available or something, that could throw a spanner in the works as well. But otherwise, there were no real problems. We had disparate ships, disparate nations, all types of NATO nations, and depending on their ship and their seniority and their capability, of course, they would get a responsible job within the exercise, or perhaps maybe not so responsible, but certainly part of it. And we, in general, we had them all, they all came into Rosyth, all the ships came into Rosyth, gathered there, and we took them to our place where we had a briefing of everybody, and then an individual briefing for certain specializations on certain ships. And then we'd send them off to sea and run the exercise. And they would go on a racetrack around the North Sea and even further north, where we would have enemy submarines positioned ready to clobber them and aircraft ready to go out and hit them. And it was very much a combined effort with the RAF, with the long-range maritime patrol aircraft. And, of course, we were very close to the RAF bases in Kinloss and Lucas there, so there were lots of opportunities for the RAF to get involved, either as blue or red, either friendly or enemy. So they were, we thought they were very realistic exercises and, as I say, quite advanced in their function and operation.
Anything you remember in particular of what was learnt or what was happening? It's difficult for me to know. What, it's so senior a level that.
Well, what I, yes. I tell you what, my recollections of the job. First of all, I had a great staff. Wonderful. Terrific. Mainly senior chief petty officers and officers, of course, running that. Not all. For the first time in my life, I had my own house, my own driver, my own PA was a Wren officer, my own leading cook, and my own leading steward. I'd never lived like this before. But I had to do quite a lot of entertaining. I was a senior naval officer, really, on the Edinburgh side of the Firth of Forth. North of that was the Flag Officer of Scotland and Northern Ireland, but I was a senior naval officer in Edinburgh, so there was quite a lot of entertaining to do, which I thoroughly enjoyed. I loved Edinburgh anyway as a city, and I got involved in a lot of outside activities when I could. So there was that aspect. It was very tight-knit, very, very good, very capable staff who ran these courses like clockwork, really. I remember things like sending inviting my co-director, the RAF group captain, to spend a week in a Type 42 destroyer on one of these exercises. And the weather wasn't all that brilliant, and he came back and he said, right, I'll get you. He said he'd spent quite an uncomfortable week in a destroyer. And the next thing I knew, I was in a car on the way to Lucas to go and fly in a Phantom for the day. And I thought I was going to be all right. They said, well, you'll fly with the squadron CO. Of course, they then pointed out that the squadron CO had probably less current flying experience than the junior pilots, because he is the guy who said. Anyway, he put me in the back seat of this thing. Oh, no, I did a simulator first to make sure I wasn't going to be totally out of countenance. Anyway, took me on this thing to attack my own ships who were out there on exercises. And it was fascinating. We did this, and we flew on one engine, we flew on two engines, we flew at sea level, we flew at 30,000 feet, we refueled from a flying tanker. We did a low level, which was oh, it was a hair-raising exercise in the mountains of Scotland. We did some. No, we didn't do any firing because I was in the observer's seat. They wouldn't let me do any firing. We did Form 18. We did a bit of aerobatics, and I managed not to throw up. And then the final thing was coming into landing, shut off one engine, and did an emergency landing. So I'd been through the hoop there. But the great thing was my co-director knew what conditions were like in a destroyer at sea. And I knew what it was like to fly a fighter up there. So there was that sort of cooperation. I got on extremely well with my chap called Brian Johnson, who was the group captain there. He was a terrific guy. And it was a very heavy job. We used to go down to commanding to fleet to debrief and wash up exercises. We used to, of course, write and produce reports on all the ships, and concentrating mainly on our own for the use of the commander-in-chief.
And did they generally do well or not well? I mean, in comparison to the NATO ships?
Or the NATO ships? Well,
sort of stand out?
It was amazing how they all buckled down and got stuck in, and every ship got something out of the exercises. But the pattern was repeating itself. The Dutch were very professional and very good. The Germans were very thorough, very intense. We occasionally had French ships. They were quite good as well. Norwegians and the Danes, normally smaller ships, but they were very keen, delighted to be over there. We often had things like German submarines, tiny little things that would flog up with only 40 crew, flog up the North Sea and live in squalor for a couple of weeks. Norwegian submarines, our own submarines. And our ships, they also varied, and you soon sort of could spot a problem, and if it was obvious. And in the command element, then you pointed it out. We weren't really into the business of delving down much below that.
Now, how long were you there? 2 years, I presume?
I was there for 2 years.
Is it always 2 years in the Navy?
Yeah, about that. And depending on the job, 2 to 3 years. Maybe sometimes in command it's even less than 2 years.
Now, what did you want to... Did you know it was going to be your last post? And did you know you'd not... If you like, it's cruel, but made the grade to go any further in the Navy? I mean, a lot of people say the captain's good enough. I mean, that...
Yes.
But, I mean, was there...
No, I knew. I mean, there was a chance, but not a very good one for me going on, because I'd never done a ministry job.
We better just once again. I think we've mentioned it before, but why didn't you want a ministry job? Well, I've let it go for a couple of times again.
Right. Okay. I'll tell you exactly why I didn't want a ministry job. I spent quite a lot of time as a junior, specialist staff officer, as a lieutenant commander and commander. Going to meetings in the ministry. I knew a lot of my friends worked in the ministry, in the Directorate of Naval Warfare, Operational Research and Trade and all these. I was not a desk man. They were great people. They suddenly had to put it on a Friday afternoon. Their boss would say, no, this operational requirement is all wrong. I want it rewritten on my desk by close of play today or something like that. It's a great thing, by close of play today. And there were some of my friends who could write out reams of good stuff. And I was just not... I was a people person. I just liked being with people and training them and seeing how they reacted. I was not a desk waller. I also found that the politics of the Ministry of Defence were something I didn't really want to get involved with. It was a question of not always what was best for you or for the job, but what might be best politically. And I'm not saying this with a big P so much as the internal politics as well. We're working with civil servants, which I couldn't quite understand, although a number of them were very able and very capable guys. And so I, apart from my 2 years with a procurement executive, stuck with operations and training. And I think obviously my appointed must have realised this because I tended to get sort of guided that way anyway.
So what was your last?
But my last job was the plum, really, when I was sent for again by the appointer and said, who happened to be a friend of mine, who said, how would you like to be captain of the fleet? Now that, to me, was the people job of all people job.
Now what does it mean, a captain of the fleet? What is it?
Well, that was a title for a senior captain on the Commander-in-Chief staff, whose responsibility was the personnel of the fleet, the seagoing personnel. I suppose the equivalent would be the personnel manager of a large, or personnel director, I suppose, of a large organisation. I mean, when I took over, there were 60,000, I had 60,000 customers.
Now,
but
where were you back?
I was based at Fleet Headquarters in Northwood. But my job was to keep my ear to the ground and to go around, visit the fleet, talk to both sailors, all ranks, ratings, and officers to find out what they were thinking about the Navy, why they were leaving, why they were staying, what did they think about this, what were their gripes, what were their worries. And report these back directly to the Commander-in-Chief. I also used to be two-way. I also used to have a very close liaison with a great guy in the Defence Ministry, Service Conditions, who kept me up to date with developments in the ministry. And I used to tell, ships, what was going on, the things that the ministry were talking about, Ministry of Defence and my bosses, and I had a fairly wide remit what to tell them. And of course they thought this was tremendous, hearing all this from the horse's mouth, if you like.
What level of ship was this? Ship's company or ship's officers?
All of them. I used to visit ships. I used to go on board and I used to spend all day normally, and I would visit junior ratings in their mess deck, so I'd sit down with them in the mess deck and chat informally with petty officers in their mess and chat informally with chief petty officers, and then I'd probably have lunch with the captain and then with the officers, and finally I would give the captain a debrief, and I would tell him what his men were thinking and talking about and what their gripes were. Now, any decent captain worth his salt would have known those anyway. But I had another extremely important role, is that I was the contact in the fleet headquarters for the captains of ships, for the commanding officers to approach informally on any matters that they wanted to talk to somebody about, get advice on within fleet. And so I, as a senior, seagoing commanding officer, was the guy whom they talked to, and they knew that what they told me would not go any further unless I had to take it further. But there was certainly no, I wouldn't go around saying, oh, well, so-and-so had to ring me up to ask what to do about such and such a defaulter. I'd never do that. I'd just give them the advice and get them going with it. And so I had this tremendously close rapport with seagoing personnel from the top to the bottom level. And I used to come back from these, I used to go on various trips. I went to the Falklands, I went to Hong Kong, all abroad, visiting our people and talking to them, and then coming back, and then sitting down, just myself and the Commander-in-Chief, and saying, this is what I'm being told by your sailors.
Now, what was your relationship like? Who was the CNC at that time?
Well, I had two. The first one I had was it the second? I don't know. A chap called Sir Julian Oswald.
Now, what was he like?
Well, coincidentally, he'd been my captain in a frigate when I was his first lieutenant in Bacanti. Great chap, great family man. Again, another quiet man. I never heard him raise his voice, saying anger. Not quite as relaxed as the other two. I was telling you about Michael Livesey or Jeremy Black, but very capable, very clever man, and a super, I thought a super commander-in-chief, lovely wife. I thought a lot of him. And he would listen and take in what he saw, what he heard. And he could then go up, of course, to the Ministry of Defence, the Sea Lords and everybody else and say, this is exactly what my sailors are thinking. And the other two services couldn't understand. I used to tell them what I did, and they said, you mean you had direct access to tell a four-star admiral what these sailors are thinking without it being staffed, they said. I said, that's the last thing we wanted to do, was it being staffed, being written down on paper and going through endless staff officers. So they were quite envious, the other two services. There was no equivalent at all, as far as I could make out. I also had a very close working relationship with, as I say, my contacts in the various directorates in the Ministry of Defence.
We'll just do the other admiral. Who was the other one?
So oh, I'm sorry. I forgot about him. That was Ben Bathurst, who was at Dartmouth with me, a bit senior, mind you.
Bathurst.
Yes.
And what was he like?
He was an old Etonian, very amiable chap, but I'm afraid he became First Sea Lord. I didn't rate him then either. So did Julian Oswald, superb First Sea Lord, but Ben Bathurst, he was a bit untidy lump of a man somehow, and he was not very convincing, I found.
Competent?
I mean, he must have been competent, otherwise he wouldn't have got where he did. He was an aviator. He was a helicopter pilot. Very competent. I couldn't talk to him as easily as I could to any of the other three very senior officers I've told you about. I mean, I could very easily tell him what his sailors thought was going on, but the sort of the personal level sort of asides and opinions, I wasn't quite so.
Now, what were your sailors telling you? What were the main things they were talking about in that 2 years?
Well, it was very interesting because we were, retention was the name of the game, keeping people, they were going outside, you know, in droves. Normally it came down to pay and allowances and the way they were dragging behind other people. They didn't mind working long hours, they didn't mind working hard. They didn't mind working in dangerous or uncomfortable positions, situations, but they, you know, were quite keen to get their rate of pay, and they always used to quit the police and the fire brigade or something. And so that was an issue. And then funny little issues, like, I remember a tremendous argument raging over whether we introduced the woolly pulley, you know, this blue woolly pulley for wear. Whether it should have a V-neck or a round neck. And that was an awful battle. As we started off...
The sailors were actually bothered about the shape of the pullover.
The neck? Yeah. Yeah. They were sometimes worried about their various sort of... the more senior ones... about their sort of various positions in society vis-a-vis the army and the Air Corps, because the army had warrant officer first class, warrant officer second class, the navy just had chief petty officers, and then we instituted the fleet chief petty officer, which became, we then started calling them warrant officers, who were really senior chiefs in a way. So that was sometimes there were minor gripes about ships' programs. There was nothing ever major. Nobody ever complained that the punishments were too harsh. Nobody ever complained to me, although they might have thought it, that their officers were useless. Or the captain was a pain. You could tell, actually, by the way they talked, but not outright, did they know? It was mainly to do with pay and conditions, quite a lot to do with conditions at home, availability of married quarters, care of wives and families.
So that's generally the sort of thing.